This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At the cruel intersection of genetics, poor diet, obesity, and poverty, a new epidemic is unfolding in the United States. Diabetes is now the country's leading cause of adult blindness, lower limb amputation, kidney disease, and nerve damage. Two-thirds of diabetics die from heart attack or stroke. Type 2 diabetes, once known as adult-onset diabetes, is now afflicting waves of poorly fed, overweight children. One in three recently born American kids are now expected to get it in their lifetimes. One in two Latinos. It's hard to talk about because personal decisions, shaped by public trends and poverty, are at the heart of it. Up next on Point, America's revealing epidemic of diabetes. Joining me now from New York is N.R. Sonny Kleinfield, reporter for The New York Times. He wrote two pieces about the diabetes crisis in New York for the paper's big series last week, Bad Blood. Sonny Kleinfield, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Give us a sense, in the worst-hit New York neighborhoods, of just how bad this epidemic is.
Well, overall in New York, there's about 800,000 adults with diabetes, which is more than one in eight. In the really bad neighborhoods of the city, it gets as bad as something like one in five adults. You're getting up in the neighborhood of 20% of people either have been diagnosed or believe to have it but haven't even been diagnosed yet.
And when you walk in these neighborhoods at this point, Sonny Kleinfield, how evident is it? How obvious is the diabetes epidemic?
Well, in some ways it's obvious, in some ways it's not obvious. Diabetes is sort of, you know, is a quiet disease. A lot of people have it for years before they know they have it. A lot of people have it for years after they know they have it without feeling any symptoms. But eventually it leads to an array of complications. It's a disease that affects virtually every organ in the body. And you walk through a neighborhood like East Harlem or the South Bronx, and you'll see it in people who have had amputated limbs, people who are blind, people who are just sluggish, and people, unable to work anymore. And virtually anybody you run into on the street and you ask them about it, either they have diabetes or their mother has diabetes or their grandmother has diabetes or a father has diabetes or a neighbor has diabetes or their employer has diabetes or their landlord has diabetes. It's just pervasive. I spent a lot of time in East Harlem, and I first sort of tried to find people who had diabetes to talk to by going through some of the obvious channels, asking that doctors at hospitals and social workers and so forth. And eventually I just sort of went out into the street, and what struck me after a while is what was hardest was to find somebody who didn't have diabetes.
Sonny Kleinfield, it's an amazing piece of reporting that you and your colleagues have done. I hope you'll stick with us a bit longer. I want to invite a couple more voices into this conversation.
Okay.
We're joined now from Atlanta by Dr. James Gavin. He's clinical professor of medicine at Emory University School of Medicine. He's the immediate past chair of the National Diabetes Education Program. James Gavin, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you today, Tom. Thank you.
Also joining us in the studio is Dr. Enrique Caballero. He is director of the Joslin Latino Diabetes Initiative and associate medical director of professional education at the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. The center has affiliates in states across the country, including California, Florida, Indiana, and Maryland. Enrique Caballero, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
James Gavin, is it fair to describe this as a new epidemic of diabetes hitting this country?
Well, I think what we've seen is an epidemic that has blossomed in the last decade. So in that sense, the full impact of it is certainly somewhat new on the scale of problems of social change of this order of magnitude. The decade of the 90s was where we saw a huge explosion of diabetes. And in fact, that explosion of diabetes occurred simultaneously with an explosion of one of the leading drivers of diabetes, and namely obesity.
So is that the primary link that you see here? Americans, poor diets, not enough exercise, therefore obesity, and right along behind comes diabetes? Is that the main driver?
I think that one of the things that is clearly outstanding in Mr. Kleinfeld's writings, and I salute him for the work that he has done and the contributions that he made with these pieces, is that a common thread in terms of risks of who is most likely to get this disease across ethnic groups are those people who are overweight and obese.
Enrico Caballero, clarify something for us here. There's more than one kind of diabetes. Some people are born with it. That's really not what we're talking about here. Others can fall into it. What's the distinction?
Well, we're talking mostly about what we call type 2 diabetes that used to be known as the adult onset diabetes.
Used to, because now so many American children get it that adult onset doesn't cut it anymore, is the phrase.
Exactly. And type 2 diabetes is usually the result of a combination of genetic and environmental factors. It is 10 times more common than the other type of diabetes called type 1 that still affects children and adolescents, but that's mostly from a genetic origin. The immune system destroys the cells in the pancreas. Mm-hmm. Whereas in type 2 diabetes, there's two main problems. The pancreas does not produce enough insulin, and at the same time, that insulin that the body is producing is not working effectively. That's what we call insulin resistance.
And with type 2 diabetes, the genetic predisposition that you describe, is that within a family, within an individual? Is it also within a race or ethnic group?
All of the above. It usually runs in families, but there are certainly some ethnic groups that have a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And that applies to all minority groups in this country. We're talking about Hispanics or Latinos. We're talking about African Americans, Asians, South Asians, Arabs.
All of those at higher risk than Caucasian Americans?
Than the Caucasian population. Usually two or three times higher prevalence rates when compared to the white population.
We have a lot of listeners who want to join us. I want to begin to invite them in. Gary is calling from Indianola, Mississippi. Hi, Gary, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Gary. I'm a teacher here in Mississippi. And I was really struck with your opening comment about sort of the balance between personal responsibility and the public's responsibility.
As a teacher, do you see diabetes among the kids you teach, the parents, Gary, there in Indianola?
Yeah, a tremendous amount of it. This region has the highest rate of it, of both obesity and diabetes, anywhere in the U.S.
So where do you see responsibility being rooted here?
I think it's primarily systematic. The poverty here is tremendous. And, the access to quality food just doesn't exist. I drive 40 miles to get fresh produce and tofu, and I can't ask one of my kids' parents who raises maybe 8 children on $300 a week to do that. They can't even afford the gas. Forget about the food. When the employment doesn't exist, when the services don't exist, that alone makes it very difficult. But also the culture here is fried food, ranch dressing, mayonnaise. I mean, people have always been eating like that, and it's not that they're irresponsible, it's that they don't know.
So there's a habit, and there's not an easy way out of it, not easy access to alternatives. Gary, thanks very much for that report from Mississippi. Sonny Kleinfeld, in New York City, I can well imagine people saying, you can't have to go that far in Manhattan to find a salad or to find the tofu that Gary's talking about from Indianola. Is there really such a systematic structure of poor food availability that we can point to that as a legitimate reason for this problem?
Well, what you say would seem to be true, but the fact of the matter is that neighborhoods in New York tend to be very insular. They become even more insular when they're poor neighborhoods. People who live in the East Harlem don't necessarily venture very far out of East Harlem, and the availability of good food in East Harlem is much less than in the neighboring community, which is the Upper East Side, where there's very little diabetes, a totally different demographic. The other thing is that healthy food often costs more than unhealthy food. East Harlem is full of fast food places advertising the dollar meals, serve the whole family for $3.95. When you don't have much money, you buy the food that's filling and expensive. And that's what happens in these neighborhoods.
Tony, what's your bottom line conclusion? I know we've got to let you go in a minute here, about what's going to have to be done here. Is there a whole industry? I mean, we've heard about lawsuits against the fast food industry. We've heard about the problems with physical education in schools at the public level. What's going to have to be done to turn this epidemic around?
Well, the problem is so well entrenched and it's so big at this point that what it's going to take is a national initiative. You know, the health department in New York says that, you know, it can't change New York by itself. It can make some difference, but it can't do it by itself because problems are so structural. So what it's going to take is something from the federal government, a national initiative on a number of fronts. The obvious, easy answer as a start is to go into the schools. You know, adults are very uptight about being told what to do by the government. They don't like being told that you can eat this and you can't eat that. However, the schools are one place where not only does the government regulate what is eaten, regulates how much exercise there is, but it's welcome. Parents expect government to provide the right diet for their children in school. They expect the government to provide sufficient gym time and exercise time for their children. And yet the schools and the government have failed in this responsibility. In New York, there's so little exercise and gym class in school that the schools for years have been in violation of state law, which just isn't enforced. And though there have been some improvement on the food that's provided in the schools, it's nowhere as close to what it should be. So if we can't even start there and do something where everybody agrees something should be done, it just shows you how far away we are from solving the problem. But it's going to take, you know, a national initiative. It's going to take some sort of educational trigger to convince people that they need to do something about this, and it's going to take a great deal of combined public will.
Sounds like it's time for tater tots and pizza out and the physical education and a lot of education in. Sonny N.R. Kleinfeld with the New York Times. You and your colleagues have gone a long way toward that with this big series, Bad Blood. Thank you for producing it, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Enrique Caballero, James Gavin, please stand by. I want to welcome one more voice from New York into this conversation. We're joined by Dr. Valentine Burroughs. He's chief medical officer of North General Hospital in East Harlem. He's a practicing endocrinologist. Dr. Burroughs, thanks very much for joining us.
Hello, Tom, and thank you.
It sounds like you might well be feeling overwhelmed by diabetes there, are you?
We are indeed. We, of course, are right at the epicenter. My hospital is on 121st and Madison Avenue, right in East Harlem. And, of course, we are overrun with patients with diabetes in all stages. For those who are fortunate enough to know that they have it or recognize it, they come in many stages of disrepair related to the disease. And it's up to us to try to fix it.
And so do you have the blindness coming in, the kidney disease, the amputations required?
Unfortunately, Tom, we do. We do have these things, and it's sad when you see it, but the thing to do is to prevent it from happening again and again and again.
Why amputations? What's the process that leads to amputation out of diabetes?
Yeah, it has to do with impairment of the vascular system, poor circulation due to high levels of blood sugar, as well as comorbid factors that we call, like high blood pressure and cigarette smoking, and additionally high cholesterol. That combination will cause vascular collapse and closure of the circulation to the lower extremities, to the toes, and then to other parts of the foot, and finally to the limb itself.
And how do you sort out the personal and public responsibilities at work in this epidemic, Dr. Burroughs?
Well, you know, there is a huge public responsibility here, and I feel that there's also, of course, there's always going to be a personal responsibility, but people look to government for help. People look to their insurers for help in preventing these complications and helping treat their diabetes. But I think the overwhelming burden is on government, on our leadership, to take this on as what it is, an epidemic, which is not going to get better. It's only going to get worse.
Kay is calling from Canton, New York. Hi, Kay. You're on the air.
I believe that there is something that's being overlooked here, and I agree with a lot that's being said. There is a need for restriction. I work in a program, in the EvenStar program, which works with low-income families, and just about every single one of them has is on food stamps or is getting funding through DSS. These families, these low-income families, have to go in to some building in order to make contact with their caseworker. It's a perfect opportunity for education. Not only that, but going back to the idea of restrictions, if you follow anyone that's on food stamps through the store, they pick up a lot of junk. Now, I know there's a program in another state, and I can't think of the state that it's in, that is putting restrictions on what can be purchased with food stamps.
So there might be a solution right there.
That kind of thing.
Kay, our time is so short. Excuse me, but I want to get that to Valentine Burroughs in New York. Dr. Burroughs, can you see public policy, maybe even through the food stamp program, being reshaped in a way that might lead people toward better diets, for starters?
Tom, I see that as a possibility if it's part of a comprehensive program. It's got to be, there has to be more effort placed in what should be recognized as so-called translational research as well. That is, all of the millions that are being spent on research just for the sake of research, is that translating down to the grassroots level where these needy and poor patients are, where they're suffering? Is anything being done to bring a comprehensive diabetes center to areas where the epicenter has clearly defined itself? And food stamps could be part of a program that includes good education, that includes access to the types of providers that are needed in order to fight this battle. You can't do it one doctor at a time.
And what about the political element here, Dr. Burroughs? Do you see a political face to this problem?
I do indeed. I think the political phase is quite obvious to me in that those who have little, those who are poverty-stricken and perhaps uneducated, have very little voice with government and with big insurance in order to get the types of things that they need brought to the level that they are at, where they are in the grassroots area, down in the poverty-stricken neighborhoods. They can't get government to come in and to provide resources that are needed right at that level. Government goes down to the big centers because they have means. They have ways of attracting funding. But this is the political reality. That is, patients from low socioeconomic groups have very little power.
A kind of need here to reach out empathetically, both with education and awareness at the same time, not easily done, but the numbers we're hearing today are really staggering. Valentine Burroughs, Dr. Burroughs at the North General Hospital in East Harlem, the epicenter of the diabetes epidemic, as we're hearing today. We thank you very much for your time, and we wish you good luck there. Let's hope awareness comes right there and helps out your community. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for your work on this.
And Dr. James Gavin, clinical professor of medicine at Emory University School of Medicine, former president of the American Diabetes Association. Dr. Gavin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom, and I appreciate all your work. Keep up this kind of emphasis.
Thank you very much. And Enrique Caballero, Dr. Caballero, wonderful of you to come in. Thanks for your insights today.
Thanks for having me. Let's work together in this. This is very important.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.